Hello community.
Welcome back to Aura Talks. We hope you're still listening because we've been really trying to keep interesting episodes coming up week after week. So this week we've got Tina on board as usual, and we also have two new members, Luke and Heiss. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves a little bit?
I'm Lucrezia from Italy, and I joined RV 4 years ago. I've been working with the youth since the last 4 years, and I recently joined this project with the idea to learn more and to challenge myself and to bring back the community as a dream that I always had. And we're going to have soon a few events which are going to happen in bigger scale. We already had workshop with schools and other target audience. And on December, on the 30th, we're going to have the biggest event. And we hope that the whole community is going to come and participate with us to create this project.
And my name is Gijs. I've been in India for the last 16 years, mainly working on alternative economy. And I'm very curious to learn what young people these days are coming up with. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So Gijs, when I told you about this podcast and how we wanted to invite you on it, you shared an article, and I found it was a very interesting starting point for us to have a discussion together. So can you tell us why you thought it was relevant, and especially this term cosmo-local?
Sure. So I think as a Dutch person living in India, in this age of climate emergency, I'm quite confused. Whether we should all go home right now, Luke should go bugger off to Italy and not travel so much, and we should all localize and retreat into our bioregions, or whether this international cosmo connected lifestyle is of benefit. You can say that if people travel more, they trade more, they are more likely to understand each other and be curious and not fight each other. So to me, this term cosmo-local kind of promises a world where you can have it both ways, where you could be both connected as well as locally grounded. To me, it's an antidote for cosmopolitan, which is very, polis is, it's about cities, it's very urban.
Outlook,
and it to me it speaks of huge unsustainable collections of millions of people just accumulating, which for me obviously is not the way to go. So I don't know exactly what it looks like, but it sounds like a breath of fresh air where you could have connected local communities. And in this article, they were also talking a lot about not just the physical arrangement of where people live, but also how they govern themselves. Mm-hmm. So to me, this comes with a distributed approach to leadership and economy.
So I just want to pick up on what you said about how, especially in these times, you've started wondering what is the best way to go about living, and you're kind of questioning these things. And I feel like especially for us, we kind of grew up with this time where the aspiration was a lifestyle that's more consumeristic, more capitalistic, more globalized, and we all aspired to reach a certain level of, material
of comfort.
Material well-being and all of that. And then suddenly the shift of narrative where actually we don't have enough resources, the world is going through so much fragmentization, the politics is completely going from more radical and more, basically everything seems to be going wrong, and we need to re-evaluate what's happening in life. And I was just wondering, how do we feel about this as young people who grew up with one aspiration and are now looking at different ways? But when you look at the structures and the systems, you kind of still feel like you're stuck with go to school, go to work, make a lot of money. How do you go about shifting things if the structures remain the same?
Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
I'm in the exact same situation, exactly what you're talking about. So I recently finished high school, and towards the end of it, while I was finishing my exams, everyone, my teachers, my relatives, my friends were like, what are you going to do after school? What job? What lane are you going to pick? What university are you going to go to? And I was like, really, I don't know. I'm so clueless. I don't know what to do in life. And they're like, yeah, pick this course, pick that course. You'll get so much money and get to travel. And I was encouraged to like aim for like a bigger house, for a bigger car, and for like a pool and a lavish lifestyle. And I grew up with that idea. And I was already with my parents. They provided me so much. I had that in my head that, yes, I need to get that too. Then I got a scholarship and I picked something that was not really into. And for me, the opportunity was big. I was going to get an internship in Europe and everything. So I'm like, cool, let's do it. So when I went to Gujarat for my university, I had everything. I had the best room, the best food, the best transport. But I don't know, I was feeling so discontent. Something was missing. And for me, I was like, yes, I've been encouraged to consume more. I've been encouraged to do all this. But what is it bringing towards the end? I've been put in this system where my whole life is revolved around making more and more money. That's when I decided, after a lot of thinking, after taking a lot of risk and being against my family and this belief that was in my head, I came back to Oroville. And I was so clueless. I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm young. I have no money. Like, nobody's going to support me for this.
So it was kind of Luke in high school kind of supported you.
Yeah, right? That's when I came back. And that's when I met Heis through Luke. And then, first of all, I didn't know what his project was about. For me, it was like, cool, I have nothing to do, so let's just join this project.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit about this project of yours.
Yeah,
so I assume you're talking about the Vikalp Sangam. And yeah. Alternative
this little project.
There are many parallel projects. So Vikalp Sangam is actually, I think, a very encouraging movement because it tries to bring together different streams of alternatives. So there is alternative education, alternative food, alternative medicine, alternative lifestyle, economy, media, anything. And they're all searching, you know. So like you said, there's this confusion and this like age of uncertainty, and everybody is sensing it, not just young people. And this Vikalp Sangam is trying to bring together those groups, because it's also a pattern that, you know, the alternative medicine people just stick to the medicine, and the education just stick to the education, and there's not enough crossing these silos. So actually what we're doing in Oroville in January is organizing a Sangam, so a big event, to invite people who question mainstream economy and who are tinkering with alternative models. And it could be at the level of a small organization, or at the level of a whole region, or, you know, any level of scale. And we're doing also research into who's trying what, and then we try to mix and match and bring them together and spark this movement.
This seems like a good way to tackle these wicked problems we keep listening to every day these days. I feel like it's a vocabulary that's become part of ours, but it's not really clear what do we mean by a wicked problem, and how exactly can we go about solving these wicked problems.
How can we feel empowered to resolve this problem, actually? I think that's the biggest question that the youth and all the people have, and the youth kind of still keep it alive, in the sense that they're going to be here in this world, so they have to find a solution. And somehow a few part of the community, which is older all over the world, it's lost the motivation in it and doesn't have a solution. And there is this big crisis between the youth and the elders to create there is a big gap, I would say. So how can we bring the context that they already know together with
the energy, maybe, or enthusiasm.
Yeah, like, how can we bridge it, and how can we empower the youth to actually take part of it?
So to me, it sounds like another silo, which feels very unnecessary. In Oroville, we talk of the youth that never ages, right? So I hope there would not be an age restriction. So for me, wicked problems often in so I study a lot of complex systems, thinking and complex systems practice, and now we talk about messy problems. And messy problems and wicked problems to me are the same thing. It's often where problems are very entangled, and they touch upon very emotional aspects of society or of groups. So there's a lot at stake. They're ambiguous, you know, it's not obvious, like, what are the scenarios that it could play into. And they often behave counterintuitively. So we can't use the kind of thinking that we are used to to predict what's going to happen. And to me also, it's interesting when you're saying that we have to solve this problem. More and more, I'm meeting people and I'm realizing that the pressure to have to solve something actually could disempower you from being spontaneous, especially at the group level. So, you know, messy problems, wicked problems are often social problems where you've got stakeholders of all different kinds of backgrounds. And what is, to me, is a way to untangle this knot is to search for a collective intelligence, which is an emergent property of people coming together with an attitude of openness. And this also means that we have to let go of the idea that I am the problem solver, you know, I'm going to fix this, which I think is very scary. You know, we make ourselves really vulnerable, especially if, say, for example, if you would say you're the young people, I'm the old person, you know, I feel like, oh shit, like,
it's dividing again.
Yeah. And also I feel like, oh, I need to fix it for you. You know, like, it's my, I have to leave this legacy that I can't leave the world in more of a mess than I found it in. So now, and then this tension.
Yeah, there's a little bit actually, of the self-righteousness that keeps coming from young people these days. Like, you guys ruined our world. You have to fix it. And now we are supposed to come here and fix it.
But
it's more like accepting that we've just all been a product of our times and we're operating within those times.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this, the skill that we are called upon to develop and nurture is actually living in this uncertainty and this ambiguity that we can't predict beforehand what will be the most useful response, yeah, what's most appropriate and relevant. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes sense, like, we're in Orville, to acknowledge that there's a big inner part in that as well. It's not fixing the world out there, but it's also the fixing the world you know, inside of me. Because I might be attached to my role as a problem solver, or I might be attached to having some control over, you know, which path is going to make most sense. And it's really, I think, psychologically challenging to let go of that. And I'm not sure whether we can all do that in the same degree. You know, if, say, you said you had a lavish lifestyle and you could you know, experience that and then go beyond it. If you've never had that access, it's very hard, I think, to ask, you know, okay, maybe you would really want to have this motorbike and you're the first, you know, in your family to ever have access to a motorbike. Yeah. But you know what? It's not a good thing. So don't go there. I find it very confusing.
Yeah,
like, what role can different people play?
A lot of reimagination somehow, because already the standards of what we're aspiring towards are so well defined, you know, the bigger house, the bigger status, the job and all of that. Now to reimagine more local, more, you know, more sustainable solutions, it requires a huge leap of imagination, I feel. I was thinking, like, when we talk about wicked problems and how actually so many domains are intertwined, I was wondering about, why is it that in Oroville, where there's so many alternative movements, why is the economy part so stilted and slow and really not moving as fast as maybe, say, the ecology, which is also maybe not the case. But I feel like really with economy, there's a real lethargy at moving from the regular mainstream.
Why
do you think that's the case?
So I have some hypotheses. One of them is actually about this psychology. So to me, when you start talking about economy and you put money on the table, it makes all your fears really obvious. You know, it's a very vulnerable process where suddenly you have to let go of... Just even in my own family right now, we're having a conversation of, you know, I have a daughter of 14. She might want to go and do higher education studies. And now we're debating, oh, should we actually be saving something for her? You know, if she wants to go and study in Europe. And then I'm like, yeah, but if I would go that path, I have to, like, hoard all kinds of resources that I'm not sure if that's the right thing to be doing. But on the other hand, if I don't, look, is she going to blame me for not enabling, like, the opportunities that maybe other parents are enabling for their kids? This is a very emotional, like, what makes me a good father? What makes me a good community member?
Yeah.
This, you know, when you put money on the table, everything is on edge. Everything gets more prone to, like, heated confrontations.
Yeah.
And it's like land also. You know, if you talk about ownership of land, for example.
Which is something in Oroville we're really trying to play with.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have this situation where we figured out a little bit on the land that, how can we build a community where there is no private property, at least of fixed assets. So that's already, I think a huge blessing. Mm. Without that, it would be even more. We would have fights over fences much more often. But I think this is one of the things. So for me, like money really, it's like, how do you call it? This little wood that you use to light the fire, kindling or something.
The match.
Yeah. It's like it makes everything flare up.
Yeah.
How about you guys? How do you feel about it? I mean, in this project, we constantly talk about this angle of scarcity and abundance. And often I find myself reflecting about how we're talking about the abundance in the community. But then we go back to our own scarcity. Like, Tina, you keep talking about housing as an issue. And Luke, you have your own things. And how do you guys manage to balance out this personal scarcity with this idealistic abundance that's we're kind of aiming towards?
I think, like, in my case, since I come from Europe and I am not Indian, it's a little bit different than the case of Tina, because I had the somehow who comes from Europe has the chance to go back and work in Europe and get some money to save for Auroville and survive in Auroville, right? And the difficulties I have, like a pain point I have since I joined Auroville, is that I really believe in the maintenance system, and it does give you all the needs you have. But in the same time, since I come from Europe, I do have to go back for a visa. I do have to go back and fly, and I have to pay for my passport and this and that, which means that out of maintenance in Auroville, I can't deal with that, right? I can deal with renting a house and buying food every day, but I'm not able to stay in India because I can't pay my visa, right? So I think the biggest challenge, mostly when you're young and when you join Auroville, is that there is no such a support which helps you to actually be part of Auroville fully without worrying how am I going to go back
future,
home,
yeah.
Right? And so I'm a person which always never wanted to think of the future, because I like to be my present and learn with the people I live in that moment and with the experiences I'm going through. But I always have that push coming from down, which is like, okay, I actually have to think about the future and how am I going to change this? Yeah.
And you, Tina, maybe you want to share something?
I honestly feel really insecure, because definitely I want to do something in future, like I want to travel, I want to work in different places, but how am I going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Same situation as hers, like at least she's been out once or twice, I've never been out.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, there's always this pressure of saving more and letting go of things that I really want to do, like buy new clothes or a new motorbike. I have to.
Yeah, I really like when it comes down to like a personal choice, you can do only so much, and then you have so many structures or fears that make it difficult for you to make these choices, like you with what do you do with your savings for your daughter's studies, or you with your future, or you with going back home, that somehow these solutions have to be coming from a collective space where we feel like we can deal with our personal fears, but also move to a space with the support of one another.
Mm.
I wanted to go to another part that's pretty central to our project, which I feel that Auroville might not be ready to accept. It's that we are going to be relying on technology as a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Our app or a web platform would essentially be online and would enable people to access information, reach out to each other without requiring to know each other or physically be in a proximity with each other.
Mm.
So I would like to share my personal story about this, about technology, because I've been having this discussion with many people, and how youngers react and olders react is very different. So when I had the first approach with technology, I was very disgusted. I was like, oh my God, no, I don't want to use technology. It's the one that is breaking down the world and this and that. And I was just following this mass of people which was against technology, right? And then in some point I found myself in RV working at the youth center in a need to learn how a laptop works, because we had to do a lot of management and create a structure which it really helps to have a laptop to write points, right? So slowly I was like, oh, actually it's interesting, I can learn a little bit more. And I started using my laptop and asked people to help me understand softwares and this and that. And I realized that having technology to help you as a tool and not as a best friend or enemy, just as a tool, it can help you to resolve things way faster, create a structure way faster, and create networks between your friends and all over the world in a faster way and in a very simple way, in the sense that you have the network, you have it online, and you can communicate with whoever you want.
Yeah, somehow simplifies also.
Exactly, and it simplifies your life. Like,
Heist, why do you think that Auroville might have this kind of reservation against this kind of solution, and especially the technological part of it?
I find it very difficult to say on behalf of all of Auroville, but I can look at myself. So when I hear using technology as a tool, and especially when you mention like you can use it in situations where you don't have to know people, I think we still have a lot of opportunity to look for models where we do have to know people.
No, I didn't mean that you don't have to know them as in they can remain strangers, but more like there's a possibility to connect strangers. Or in Auroville, you know people by their faces, but you might not know them beyond that.
Right.
Yeah. But there's still people who you're sharing this physical space with, and how can we have more connection between them?
Yeah, sure, that's great.
Yeah.
But then if the aim is
to build connection,
yeah, then technology can be one of many tools. Now you can have face-to-face meetings, you can have events, you can have etc., and you can have technology.
Yeah.
I think what's often a trap that we fall in, and I think again it has to do with our yearning for quick fixes and fast shortcuts, that we think, oh wow, this technology can do so much, and then we attach much more importance to the technology than the other things, which might be a little more, you know, you have to actually overcome your inhibitions and deal with that person who shows up late, and do with the messiness, the interknottedness of human connections. And I think we have a legacy in the modern society of trying to escape that and then go for technology.
Okay.
So my background is, for example, agriculture. I was working with farmers. They have the choice of going organic or using a lot of genetically modified organisms. Okay. The organic means you have to turn all your leaves and see how many bugs and putches are there or not. It's a lot of hassle. The technology promises you
the convenience.
That, yeah, exactly, just open the packet, put the seed, and all will be taken care of, and of course we want that, and in this case I think there's if we can withstand that temptation, technology can be really useful. One more thing I wanted to say is that when I'm thinking about these processes, there are different stages of moving towards some kind of a new future, and I'm thinking of the U theory. There's an interesting practice called presencing, and it's a U, like you go down a U curve, and then from the bottom you go up. So when you go down the U curve, it's all about letting go, opening your mind, and so forth, and then at the bottom it starts being about letting come and building something. So I think technology is very obviously useful for when you're building something, but when you're going down the U curve, in order to really open up yourself to new possibilities, I'm not so sure whether it is technology that we need.
Then what do you think about our platform, where we're really trying to go about doing workshops on ground and see what are people on ground wanting, and trying to find that synthesis between these two? So we go to Youth Center, we go to Youth Link, we're hoping to have something at African Pavilion soon. We're really trying to go and reach the people and see where are they at, and how much interest or how much initiatives can come from on ground, and then using all of that kind of information to feed into a platform that is again all about human interaction, finding out your personal needs, the community's needs, really building connections.
Sure.
Do you see that avoiding that trap?
There's a whole movement in Silicon Valley. It's called the Lean Startup Movement, and there's a very interesting guy called Steve Blank, and he writes about customer development. Very often what happens, when you start using a lot of IT, a lot of focus is on product development. What features can this AI do, etc. If you take a different approach and you start getting to know your users really well, and you build features from there, I think you can't go wrong. But it means letting go of any presupposed, maybe it's not a platform. What will emerge is something radically different than what you think will emerge. So if you're open to surprise, I think it's fine.
I think more and more as a team, we're starting to be open to whatever's coming, and especially looking at on ground in Oroville, what are the solutions coming from the residents of Oroville?
Yeah.
Yeah. But also what he was saying, tying this back to Oroville and the app, the element of human interaction and everything, like I always say in Oroville, everything goes around with the word of mouth, and the most popular person gets more advantage, right? But through this app, I feel like this element is being challenge in a way, because like you don't really see, I mean, of course you see the person, but if you have something available on the app, you just give it away to whoever needs it. It's not like, oh, this is my best friend and I know him since 10 years and I'm going to give it to him. Everybody has an equal opportunity to access to this.
So it brings the question, like, how can we also trust other people which are not in our circle, but in the whole community?
Or how as a community we can start building more trust? Because there are specific reasons why we are not able to trust or not wanting to share. But how can we as a community look at these and really try to face it?
And break the fear of it.
I feel like we could keep talking forever, but it's been a long podcast. I hope you're still listening. I just wanted to say that next time, so far we've been talking about a very rosy picture of our project and how things have been going so well and the youth are so excited. But next time we're going to share a little bit about our reservations. We're going to call it The Other Side, where all of us are going to talk about what we are worried about might or might not work.
Very important.
See you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ciao for now.
Ciao.